most of these 10-minute halacha shiurim, I've had the opportunity to go through the sugya and to speak to gedolei haposkim about it, and therefore come to what I think is a reasonable conclusion. This is going to be an exception. Today, I'm doing a topic that, when I try to speak to gedolei haposkim, most of them aren't really familiar with what it is that I'm speaking about, and therefore are not able to issue a psak on it. So what I'm presenting here is completely betoras efshar, something that's a possibility that I think requires further study, and I certainly invite anyone who has ideas or has thoughts about this to get back to me on this. This is not related to camp per se, it's just related to what seems to be fairly common practice. In any serious exercise program that a person embarks on nowadays, there will almost always be a yoga component. Now, it struck me to think about when I was doing an exercise program, and I was trying to do the yoga components. Didn't last long, I almost killed myself, but aside from the fact that I almost landed on my head and killed myself, when they do yoga, it struck me as odd that they tell you, okay, now we are doing sun salutations, now we are doing ashtanga, namaste. I don't know all these things, I don't know what the words mean, but if you do a little bit of research, not all that much research, you'll discover that every single thing in yoga comes straight from Avodah Zarah. It's from Hinduism, from Buddhism, and from these types of religions. There is some debate as to whether yoga preceded the religions or the religions preceded yoga, but there's definitely a very, very strong association between them, and therefore yoga is understood in any place that does yoga in the world today. Pretty much it's understood to be a continuation of the Indian tradition, and it's more than physical exercises. It's a meditative and spiritual type of exercise where one connects the body, the soul, and yoga means unity, where they unify everything in the connection to something greater. That is true of every yoga class. Now, there are some yoga classes that you'll find where in the yoga studio they'll have an actual statue that they bow to at the beginning and end of the class. Most of the time, I would guess, in Brooklyn, the Five Towns, Teaneck, you know, those types of areas where it's mostly from people doing yoga, they don't actually have a little getchka in the room. But all of the moves are moves that originated in Avodah Zarah, and are all the names that they call it are Avodah Zarah names. Now, it is certainly a very healthy thing to do. It's certainly, physically healthy, stretching, balance. There's a reason that people do it. You feel like you're not really moving all that much, but somehow you're sweating a lot. It's a very unique kind of exercise. Most people today practice it purely as part of a normal exercise routine, at least in America, and don't have deep kavanos for Avodah Zarah. But again, almost all yoga classes include these, at the very least, some sort of chanting, something like that, where there's some sort of connection, some sort of meditative connection. There are still people today who use it as a form of idolatrous worship. And in fact, there have been churches and mosques that have banned yoga from their premises because they say that the churches say we're here for our religion, not for some other religion. That's not what these premises are for. There's even been some lawsuits in California when they wanted to introduce, as part of the phys ed requirements in some of the public schools, a yoga component. So there were lawsuits about separation of church and state, that you're bringing something religious into the schools and that they shouldn't do it. And they had to change all the names of all the moves in order to make it legal. Now, as with many spiritual experiences, Jews tend to gravitate toward these things, and a little research online shows that there is even yoga minyanim out there, where yoga stretches and liturgy connect with each other as a way of meditating and connecting to the Almighty. It's very difficult to get a psak on this issue, because most of the rabbanim that you ask about yoga don't know what it is. They'll say, oh, it's just exercise, they use those words, they use those exact poses, people have no idea what it is. So I just want to suggest what the halachic issues might be, and again, it may be completely mutter. I just don't know. I just don't know why. The first issue and the most major issue is chukas hagayim, that there is an issue in the Torah that we're not allowed to go b'darkei amori, we're not allowed to follow the chukos of the gayim. Now, what exactly does that include, to go in the chukos of the gayim? So it's a fundamental machlokas rishonim. Tosos in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Aleph writes that there are two categories of chukas akum. One category is things that goyim do for the purpose of idolatry, And the second category is customs that are nonsensical, even if the origins of the customs are not idolatrous, but they're just something that has no inherent meaning, so we're not supposed to do something that goyim do, period, even if it has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. That's the sheet of Tosos. The Ran and the Ma'arik disagree. The Ran in his commentary to Avodah Zarah and in his commentary to Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Beis, and the Ma'arik, in Shuvas Ma'arik, Klal Nun Ches, both disagree with Tosos and say that that any custom that's rooted in idolatrous practice, that's certainly Chukas Hagayim, but something that's just Stam, something that doesn't have any real meaning, are not included in the Isser. However, says the Ran, and this is what says the Ma'arik, and this is what the Ramah quotes, La Alacha, the sheet of the Ma'arik, the more lenient sheet of the Ma'arik, the Ramah quotes in Yerodea, Simen Kuf Ayin Ches Sif Aleph, that anything that has no logical reason, there's no reasonable explanation as to why it is that people are doing this, we have to assume has its roots in Avodah Zarah unless we can prove otherwise. And if it has its roots in Avodah Zarah, then we cannot follow such a practice. So essentially what it turns out, the Ramah says, if there's a practice that people have that you don't know where it comes from, but there's a very logical reason for it, then you're allowed to do it, because probably it doesn't come from Avodah Zarah. For example, says the Ramah, if the minhag is that doctors wear white coats, so you don't know where that comes from exactly, so you have the right to assume that since it's logical that if you're in a hospital and you need quick medical attention, you don't want to call over someone who might be an orderly, you want to call someone who might be a doctor, so you're going to try to find the guy in the white coat. You're going to find someone who's easily identifiable as a doctor, so that makes sense. It makes logical sense, and therefore we don't have to assume that it comes from Avodah Zarah. But something that has no logical reason for it, we have to assume is based in Avodah Zarah, and anything that's based in Avodah Zarah is automatically Asur. Now, what goes without saying, what the Ramah is obviously assuming, what every Shita and Rishonim assumes, is that something that we know is based in Avodah Zarah, even if there might be some additional benefit, meaning even let's say there's something that's based on Avodah Zarah that could be used for refuah, that could be used in other ways that might be beneficial for a person, but if it's Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to practice it. You're not allowed to do things that are Avodah Zarah. So that seems to be one issue with yoga, is that it's very clear that all of it is based in Avodah Zarah. So it's, unless one changes all the names and all the poses and does something, modifies everything, where they literally kasher the whole thing out, then it would be very challenging to understand why it would not be a violation of Chukas Hakam. The only posek that I found that actually spoke about this was the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1977 issued a public psak that they should not, that no one should do yoga. Now you have to understand the culture in the 70s was a little bit different. Also, it was actually being used as a form of what's the opposite of kiruv, of a richuk, to draw Jews into Avodah Zarah, to draw Jews into that entire culture of meditation and of Eastern religion, and certainly the Rebbe was reacting to that, but on its own merit it seems that that's a very reasonable psak anyway. Now then there's a separate issue of using the names of Avodah Zarah. Now the Gemara, the Pasuk in Chumash, in Parshas Mishpatim, says that we're not allowed to mention the names of other gods, and the Mechilta understands that it's talking about praising in Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Gimel and Beis, says that it's not only about praising Avodah Zarah, you can't even tell your friend, hey, meet me in front of this Avodah Zarah, to use it as a landmark, as a way of saying, this is where we'll meet up, this is a place where we'll meet. The Gemara says that you're not even allowed to refer to a city named after an Avodah Zarah, unless the particular Avodah Zarah is mentioned in the Torah. Any Avodah Zarah whose name is mentioned in the Torah, for whatever reason, we're allowed to say those names, and the obvious reason it's in the Torah, we have to say those names when we learn Torah, but according to the Gemara, even casual mention of the name of an Avodah Zarah with no intention whatsoever to praise the deity itself would still be a prohibition, would still be Asr. The Gemara explains that not only mentioning the Avodah Zarah, even causing others to mention the name of the Avodah Zarah is also Asr min HaTorah, and the example the Gemara says is not to, like we said, not to tell your friend to meet you in front of a certain avodah zarah. So the extent to which the example reflects on the exact parameters of this iser is a machlokas rishonim. The Rush of their Masech Sanhedrin quotes Yesh Omrim that the iser is limited to cases where you're using the name of an avodah zarah for a purpose, where you're trying to define a landmark, where so that you can use that avodah zarah for something, but just mentioning the name for no constructive purpose whatsoever would be totally mutter. The Rush quotes from the Yesh Omrim that the name is only Yasser because you're using the Avodah Zarah for your benefit, the name of the Avodah Zarah for your benefit. The Rush himself disagrees with that. He says that it's Asr to mention the name of an Avodah Zarah at all, whether there's a purpose to it, there's not a purpose to it. And in fact, the Tur in Yardin, Simkuf Mem Zayin, says that you're not allowed to mention the name of an Avodah Zarah even if there's absolutely no need to mention it, even if you're not using it for your own benefit at all. The Beis Yosef is not sure about this. After all, it would seem mentioning the name for no reason at all would be a more severe violation than mentioning the name for a practical reason. So he's not sure why it is that that the machlokes works in that direction. He thinks it should work in the other direction, that if you mention it for no reason at all, that would seem to be worse, because what are you doing? You're just trying to connect to Avodah Zarah. If you have some reason to connect to it, then it would seem to be better. But be that as it may, in any case, the halach in Shulchan Aruch and Sim Kuf Mem Zayin in Yardeh Sif Aleph is that it's usher to mention the name of an Avodah Zarah, whether or not there's a reason to do so, and even causing somebody else to mention the name of an Avodah Zarah would also be asur. The Maram Shik in Yardeh Simen Kuf Ayin Aleph adds that even saying something that would cause somebody else to think of an Avodah Zarah would be asur. Not everyone is on board with the Maram Shik, but that's the Maram Shik's extension. So it seems that if there are shemos of Avodah Zarah involved in the normal sprach of yoga, so to speak, that the way they talk and the way the whole practice is done is that there are all these names being thrown around, so it would seem that it's a prohibition on that level as well. So again, I haven't spoken to Gray Poskim about this. I don't really know much about it. I just know that I tried it once and it struck me as very odd. All the poses struck me as very odd, even though they are very healthy and they are it's good to have balance, good to have exercise. Maybe Pilates would be a better solution than yoga, but it seems I don't know what the heter is. I'm sure there's a heter out there, even if we have no intention whatsoever, which I assume any of us, any of our family members who do yoga have no intention whatsoever for Avodah Zarah. The halacha prohibits even doing something that we know is based in Avodah Zarah. And this, there's no question. We know 100% that this is based in Avodah Zarah, and we know that it's still being used in Avodah Zarah. That in many, many places, it's still being used in the worship of Avodah Zarah. So it's not even something that has fallen out of practice. So again, this is not a halacha conclusion. This is something I'm putting out there. If anyone has any suggestions of what the kula is, or you know of any poskim that are makel on this issue, I would certainly be eager to hear it. Not because I plan on doing any more yoga. I certainly have no intention of doing any yoga, but that's just my own reasons. But I would certainly be interested to be malamid zuchus al Yisrael to learn what the hetter might be.